directed by Rudy Valley. This is Rudy Valley and Company. Tonight our cast includes
a brilliant actress,
Miss Judith Anderson, a lady from Australia who has become one of the truly great ones of the American theater.
A splendid actor,
Walter Abel, reclaimed from the films and currently playing opposite Catherine Cornell in Maxwell Anderson's Wingless Victory.
Today's hero,
Patrolman Gerald Hendricks of Armonk, New York, whose recent capture of bank robber Merle Vanderbush made all the front pages. A chanteuse, Mary Jane Walsh, a fascinating young songstress making her debut on the network.
A recanter,
funny man Milton Douglas, another newcomer, suave, sophisticated, and very, very droll.
And a byword,
by which Graham means Edgar Bergen, who in his few short weeks on the air has become a byword for humor in thousands of homes. Edgar will be assisted by his dummy, the impish Charlie McCarthy. Charlie McCarthy and the other distinguished members of our cast will be assisted by the Connecticut Yankees, and the Yankees in turn will be assisted by the Swing Kids, who supply their own assistance. On with the show. Composer, Harry Warren. Lyricist, Al Dubin. The song, Melody for Two. The picture, same. Company, the Warner Brothers. Edgar Bergen, ventriloquist extraordinary, to the very front rank of radio favorites has been, in the words of the poet, nothing short of sensational. Edgar and his dummy, Charlie McCarthy, have become so well known in such a short time that it is no longer necessary to tell you that the two voices you hear both belong to the same person, which is my reason for not telling you that both voices belong to Edgar Bergen. Ventriloquist Edgar Bergen with his boyfriend, Charlie McCarthy.
How do you do? I am Professor Seymour.
I am Charlie McCarthy.
I am a professor of astrology and palmistry.
I am Charlie McCarthy.
Are you interested in the future through palmistry and astrology?
Yes. I just think it's too supernatural. It's just too divine. It's just so occult. Oh, it's wonderful. It's just too utterly supernatural and kindred stuff. I don't know what it is.
Well, do you know very much about the Zodiac?
Well, very little.
Very little.
Yes. And when I say very little, I mean just that, I imagine.
Well, do you know that the zodiac is divided into 12 constellations?
Is it really?
Marvelous.
What won't they think of next? Oh, that is interesting, yes.
Yes, and I want you to know, too, that this series of 12, it moves westward from the vernal equinox 1 degree every 72 years.
Is that so?
Yes.
Well, I can't wait that long.
It takes over 25,000 years for a complete circuit.
How long for a short circuit?
No. Now, what do you know about the zodiac?
You mean zodiac bicarbonate?
I do not.
Awfully sorry.
Are you familiar with the names Aquarius?
No.
Scorpio?
No.
Gemini?
Humani?
Gemini.
Gemini?
Yes.
Is the last name Cricket?
It is not.
Awfully sorry. Awfully sorry on two. Yeah.
If you don't know anything about the subject, young man, why don't you keep quiet? Why don't you listen?
All right. I will. You don't have to bite my ears off.
All right, yes. Now, would you like to have me read your palm?
Yeah. How much are you going to stick me?
Well, it will cost you 50 cents.
I'll give you a quarter.
No. I can't do it for less than 50 cents.
Well, if you can read the future, why do you want to waste your time reading palms for half a buck?
Well, you see, Charlie, as a matter of fact, money means very little to me.
Yeah, well, then read it for a nickel.
No. Well, I will give you a reading.
Thanks awfully.
Yes. I will have to hold your hand.
Well?
I say I will have to hold your hand.
Yeah?
Yes.
I don't know you very well, all that.
Now, you'll have to take your gloves off.
My what?
Your gloves. You'll have to take them off.
I haven't any on.
Oh, you haven't? Oh, I see.
Haven't had any on.
Oh, I see. Haven't had any soap on them either.
All right, Professor. I don't have to come here to be insulted. Oh. I can get that at home. At better prices.
Yes.
Yes, I can.
Yes. Now, you have what we call a spatulate hand.
A
spatulate hand.
Marvelous, isn't it?
Yes. All your fingers are the same shape.
Yes, five of a kind.
That's right. Now, you will notice that the nail on your thumb, or rather on your index finger,
yes,
is very broad.
It's what?
The nail on your index finger.
Yes.
It's very broad.
Yes, it is.
There's a lesson there.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what it means?
I certainly do. I won't stick it in a ringer again.
Mm-hmm. Now, the four principal lines in the hand is the life line, the head line, the heart line, and the fate line.
Hmm. Some line.
Yes. Now, the head line could start from two places.
Well, why doesn't it?
Well, it does.
What are you arguing about?
I'm not arguing. It's impossible for me to give you a reading under these conditions, young man.
What's the matter?
I must have it quiet.
Yeah?
Yes.
How about soft music?
Well, that would even be better.
I can whistle Yankee Doodle backwards.
No.
You wouldn't care for it.
No. All right, go ahead. I can see in your hand a great deal of travel.
Yes?
Yes, an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
You like to travel?
Yes, I do. It's a gypsy in me. Yes, it is.
Yes. Well, have you had much experience along that line?
Yes, I have.
You have had experience?
Yes. I had a funny one last night. I was coming out of an alley.
No. No, I mean traveling. Traveling experience.
Yeah, well, I was traveling.
Oh, you were.
I full speed ahead.
You know, a traveler usually has a destination or something to lure him on. Did you have that?
No, but I had five guys chasing me.
Oh, you did. You are a man of a very happy disposition.
Yeah, but how about money, a fortune?
Well, I'm happy to tell you, Charlie, that you will inherit $10,000.
I will?
Yeah.
Woody, I'm rich, Woody. The lollipops are on the coffee. Woody.
But through some legal trouble, you're going to lose the money.
Boy, I went through that in a hurry, didn't I?
Yes. But one fine thing about you, you are cheerful.
Yes, I am. I will say that.
You are a very cheerful nature.
Mm-hmm.
You radiate sunshine.
I do what?
I say you radiate sunshine.
Oh, definitely, yes.
Yes.
Everybody calls me Radiator McCarthy.
Knock, knock. Well, young man, I'm not going to go ahead with this reading.
Why?
It's just impossible for me to give you a reading.
Yes.
I must have cooperation.
Uh-huh.
You see, in spite of my years of study of the subject...
Yes, of course.
There are times when I feel as if I don't know a thing about it.
Yeah, well, that's the way you impress me.
His father wanted him to be a lawyer, and his mother wanted him to be a great pianist. So Graham McNamee compromised by becoming a concert singer. That is, until radio came along to give him his present speaking part. Speak out, Graham. Practically everybody likes the taste of chocolate, especially in chocolate pudding. But homemade chocolate pudding is such a job to make. There's all that measure. New York nightclub owners that she had something. But now that Dorothy L'Amour is starred in her first picture, they wish they had signed her up. She sings Moonlight and Shadows in Paramount's Jungle Princess. Happy this evening to bring back to our microphone a great and charming lady who has been with us many, many times before, Miss Judith Anderson. The warmth and artistry of her playing are accepted by theatergoers everywhere as the standards by which others are judged. Her most recent role was that of the Queen Mother in The Hamlet of John Gielgud that was hailed by the critics as the greatest of our time. With Miss Anderson, we present that fine actor, Mr. Walter Abel, who, after a highly successful Siege of Hollywood, his latest in The Green Light, is once more trotting the boards on Broadway, playing opposite Catherine Cornell in Maxwell Anderson's Wingless Victory. Our drama tonight is a scene from the motion picture version of Clements Dane's play, A Bill of Divorcement. Presenting now, Judith Anderson and Walter Abel. Fifteen years before the action begins, Hilary Fairfield, played by Mr. Abel, is shell-shocked in France. His mental collapse is made more complete by an hereditary tendency to insanity, and it was necessary to confine him in an asylum. He returns to his home after a sudden recovery and escape from his guards. His wife, Margaret, played by Miss Anderson, has planned to marry again. As we take up the story, she is telling the other man, Gray Meredith, about their predicament. Harold Vermillier is heard in the role of Gray. Time, the present, place, the library of the Fairfield Country House in England. The curtain rises.
Gray, he's come back.
Who?
Hillary.
Hillary? What Hillary? Hillary?
Yes, he got away. He came straight here.
Oh, don't be frightened. I'm here. Is he dangerous?
No, no, poor fellow.
I'd better take charge of him while you phone the asylum.
No, no, Gray.
Not pleasant, but it's the only thing to do.
You don't understand. He's well. He knows me.
I don't believe it.
You think I want to believe it? Oh, what a ghastly thing to say.
It has nothing to do with you. He has nothing to do with you. Let me deal with him.
Dr. Elliot's coming. He can always manage Hillary.
You better go up to your room. It'll be over in an hour. We'll get him away quietly, poor devil.
But it's no good, Gray. He's well. I've called the asylum already. They said I should have heard in a day or two, even if he hadn't got away.
Really well?
The old Hillary. Voice and ways and... Oh, what am I to do?
Do? You?
Don't you see? He knows nothing. His hair's gray and he talks as he talked at 20. It's horrible.
What do you mean, he knows nothing?
About the divorce. About you and me. He thinks it's all as he left it.
You said nothing?
He's like a lost child come home. You think I want to send him crazy again?
You'll come away with me at once.
I can't. I've got to think of Hillary.
You've got to think of me.
I am. But I've done him so much injury. Oh, Gray, I'm a wicked woman. I'm wishing he hadn't got well. I'm wishing the doctors would say it's not true. In my wicked heart, I'm calling down desolation on my own husband.
You have no husband. You're marrying me in a week. You're mine.
I'm afraid.
Whose are you? Answer me.
Yours.
You'll know it.
I know it.
Then never be afraid again.
Not when you're here. I'm not afraid when you're here. But I must be good to Hillary. You see that?
What good is good to him, poor devil?
At least I'll break it gently.
All you can do for him is to come away now.
How can I? He's got to be told.
Then let me tell him.
No, no, from you. Just from you it would be... Oh, too cruel. I won't have cruelty.
Then go straight up to town and get married at once. That'll settle everything.
You mustn't rush me. I've got to do what's right.
It is right. There's nothing else to be done. You can't stay here.
No, I can't stay here. Don't let me stay here.
Come with me. The car's outside. You say Elliot will be here in 10 minutes? Leave him a note. He's an old friend as well as a doctor. Let him deal with it if you won't let me.
But can't you see that I must tell Hillary myself. It'll hurt him less from me.
It'll hurt him 10,000 times more.
Oh, but differently. It's the things one might have said that fester. At least I'll spare him that torment. He shall say all he wants to say.
I suppose the truth is that there's something in the very best of women that enjoys a scene.
That's the first bitter thing you've ever said to me.
Can't you see what it does to me to know that you're in the same house with him? Come on out of it. Don't stay here.
I don't want to stay. Don't let me.
Meg.
There he is, calling for me.
Meg, where are you?
It's too late. I shall never get away from him now.
Listen to me. We're leaving for London tonight. We'll be married at once. I'm going home now. There are orders to be given. But I shall be back here in an hour. I give you just that hour to tell him what you choose. After that, you'll be ready to come.
If I've managed...
There's no if. You're coming. Goodbye, dear, and till this evening.
Hello, what's that? Who's this? Doctor, I've been expecting them down on me. It's no good, you know, Doctor. I'm fit as you are. Any test you like?
Mr. Meredith called to see me, Hillary. He's just going.
Oh, sorry.
I don't like leaving you.
It's better. But come back quickly.
You'll be ready?
I will.
Meg? Who's that man?
His name's Gray Meredith.
What's he doing here?
He's an old friend.
I don't know him, do I?
No. It's since you were ill. It's the last 5 years.
He's in love with you. I tell you, the man's in love with you. Do you think I'm so dazed and crazed I can't see that? You shouldn't let him, Meg. You're such a child, you don't know what you're doing when you look and smile.
I do know.
Lord, I don't wonder at him, poor brute. Meg, you've changed.
Yes, Hillary.
Taller and more beautiful. And yet I miss something.
Yes, Hillary.
Something you used to have. A kind way with you. You've grown right up. Away beyond me. Haven't you?
Yes, Hillary.
But I'm going to catch up. You'll help me to catch up with you, Meg? Meg, why don't you hold out your hand?
I can't, Hillary. My hands are full.
What, eh? What are you driving at? What are you trying to tell me? What's changed you? It's that man.
I've done nothing wrong. I'm trying to tell you. I only want to tell you and make you understand. Hillary, 15 years is a long time.
Yeah. I suppose it's a long time for a woman to be faithful.
That's it. That's the whole thing. If I'd loved you, it wouldn't have been long.
You did love me once.
Did I? Once? I don't know.
What do you expect me to do? Forgive you?
There's nothing to forgive. Oh, yes, so much, Hillary, to forgive each other. But not that.
Divorce you, then? Because I'll not do that. I'll have no dirty linen washed in the court.
Hillary, I divorced you 12 months ago.
What?
I divorced you.
You couldn't do it. You'd no cause. Do you think I'm to be put off with your lies? You'd no cause. Oh, I see what you're at. You want to drive me mad again. You devil, you devil, you shan't do it. You've made a new life for yourself, haven't you? There's no room in it for me, is there?
Hillary, I can't stand it.
Yes, but listen to me, listen to me. You don't listen. Listen to me. I've been so long alone.
Gray, why don't you hurry?
I'll not trouble you. I'll not get in your way, but don't leave me all alone.
Madness.
It's naked need.
What good should I be to you? I don't love you, Hillary. Oh, poor Hillary. I love Gray. I never think of anything but him.
But it's me you married. You promised. You promised. For better or worse. In sickness, in health.
It isn't fair.
Anything's fair. You don't know what misery means.
I'm learning.
But you don't know. You couldn't leave me if you knew. Well, I've never known you hurt a creature in all your life. I've seen you step aside for a little creeping green thing on the path. You've never hurt anything. Then how can you hurt me so? You can't have changed since yesterday.
It's half my life.
It's yesterday. Yesterday.
Yes, it is yesterday. It's how you took me yesterday. But now you're doing it again.
Am I? Am I? Is it yesterday? Yesterday come back again?
No. No, Hillary, I can't.
No, you can't. You can't leave me. You won't do it to me. You won't drive me out. The wilderness, alone, alone. You can't do it, Meg. You can't. You can't.
I can't.
You'll stay with me? Oh, God bless you, Meg. God bless you. God bless you.
You mean... God help me.
The Royal Gelatin Hour continues. I'd like to give my impression, a rather vague one, of Noel Coward singing his Mad Dogs and Englishmen. In tropical climes at a certain time of day, when all the citizens retire to take their clothes off and perspire, one of those rules the greatest of fools obey. Because the sun is far too sultry, and one must avoid its ultra violet ray, 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 ray.
Happily, 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 ha! Bully, 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 ha! Bully, 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 ha!
The natives grieve when the white men leave their huts, because they're obviously, definitely nuts. Mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. The Japanese don't care to. The Chinese wouldn't dare to. Hindus and Argentines sleep firmly from 12 to 1. But Englishmen detest us, siesta. In the Philippines, there are lovely screens to protect you from the glare. In the Malay States, they have hat-like plates which the Britishers won't wear. At 12 noon, the natives swoon, and no further work is done. But mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. It's such a surprise for Eastern eyes to see that though the English are effete, they're quite impervious to heat. When the white man rides over, any native hides in glee, because the simple creature's oath he will impale his soul at Toby on a tree, 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 tree.
Hobbity, 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 ha! Bully, 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 ba! Bully, 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 ba!
It's such a shame when the English claim the earth. that they give rise to such hilarity and mirth. Mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. The toughest Burmese bandit can never understand it. In Rangoon, the heat of noon is just what the natives shun. They put their scotch or eye down and lie down. In the jungle town where the sun beats down to the rage of man and beast, the English garb of the English guard simply gets a bit more creep. In Bangkok, at 12 o'clock, they foam at the mouth and run. But mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. Mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun. The smallest Malay rabbit deplores this stupid habit. In Hong Kong, they strike a gong and fire off a noonday gun to reprimand each inmate who's in late. In the mangrove swamps where the python romps, there's heat from 12 to 2. Even caribous lie around and snooze, for there's nothing else to do. In Bengal, to move at all is seldom, if ever, done. But mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday, 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 son. Making predictions is a rather dangerous business. There's a great many people who bet on horse races will admit. But we believe our next guest tonight has a bright future ahead of her and are ready to go on record to that effect. Her name, Mary Jane Walsh. Her looks are far, far more passing than fair. Her ability to portray in song the foibles and furbelows of various types of people is, we think, an unusual one. Mary Jane is new to the network, but we are sure that she belongs right up in the select company of some of our discoveries of the past. Ladies and gentlemen, Mary Jane Walsh.
I can't give you anything but love, baby. That's the only thing I've plenty of.
Hello? Yes, this is Mary Jane. Oh, hello, Jim, darling. How are you? You're leaving town? Well, when will you be back? You're not coming back. Oh. Goodbye. I could look for sympathy. Maybe he'd come back to me. But love isn't made that way. Oh, I could stand up for my rights and maybe not have lonely nights. But I'm afraid the game isn't played that way. I'm heading for a rainy season. My love is leaving me behind. He didn't even give a reason. Well, a man has got a right to change his mind. He didn't say he'd found a new love. He didn't want to be unkind. And though I can't believe we're through, but still, a man has got a right to change his mind. But I'll be wanting him, wanting him, no matter where he may be. And I'll be haunting him, haunting him, till he comes back to me. I'm hoping he'll discover someday, true love like mine is hard to find. He'll come again into my arms and say, a man has got a right to change his mind. But I'll be wanting him, each hour that he's away. And I'll be haunting him, till he comes back someday. But
But if he ever says, forgive me, I'm only human, he will find. 'Cause after all, I'm just a woman, and a woman's got a right to change her mind. I'm just a model from Altman. My life's one long walking routine. Oh, yes, the hats are cunning and the gowns are simply stunning. But after work, where am I seen? With a buyer at some cheap cabaret. It's never the Plaza. It's never the Pierre. I've never seen the Rainbow Room, though I understand it's there. But something grand happened this very morn. I tell you, I'm like a woman reborn. I got a phone call today. Oh, it made me feel kind of gay. Someone asked me out to dine and dance. Oh, we've got the evening all planned, and the place he chose is grand. I'm picturing every minute in advance. Lorgnette's looking at lobster thermidor. I had cooking is just the setting for something snooty. They call rhythm at the Rainbow Room. Sun gleaming amid the rubber plants. Old gents beaming on dainty debutantes. Youth and beauty get their rhythm at the Rainbow Room. Oh, it's a charming thing to see them swing with nonchalance and grace. Why, even the air they breathe up there comes straight from Sutton Place. If you're looking for notoriety in the columns of high society, get right with them. Your rhythm at the Rainbow Room. Order the orchid, order the town car, order a table for two. Baby, we're gonna dine not at six, but at nine. I'm going social on you. Oh, don't let the corsage get in the polka. Don't try to order a stew. Baby, don't dare to sneeze with your mouth full of peas. Watch what the other swells do. Lorgnette's looking at lobster thermidor. Hi-hat cooking is just the setting for something snooty they call rhythm at the Rainbow Room. April in Paris, chestnuts in blossom, holiday tables under the tree. Well, you can have Paris, and it's gorgeous spring. I'm going to the Rainbow Room and have my fling. If you're looking for notoriety in the columns of high society, get right with them.
And suddenly there you are. You're smile in the sun, your kiss in the breeze, your name in my prayer. This beautiful world is full of your tender charm. You're here, you're there, but never in my arms. News, and to the long list of newsworthy notables who've appeared here with us, we add tonight the name of a hero policeman, Patrolman Gerald Hendricks of Armonk, New York. A few days ago, Jerry Hendricks made front page headlines all over the country when he faced down the bandit guns of Merle Vanderbush and two companions and captured the trio after they had stuck up a New York State bank. Vandenbush, dubbed Public Rat Number One by none other than headman G-Man Hoover, was wanted from New Jersey to Wisconsin and was reckoned a mighty tough hombre until he ran into his nemesis. The nemesis, by the way, is 6'2" and weighs 185 pounds. He was born in Indiana 26 years ago, was high school wrestling champion of that state, had 2 years at Indiana University, and all in all stands for everything that is best in the new type guardian of the law. Allow me to introduce an officer and a gentleman from Indiana, Patrolman Gerald Hendricks. Jerry, how long have you been a hand on the long arm of the law?
About 2 years, Rudy.
I see. Just a rookie. You ought to do pretty well after you learn the ropes.
Well, I still have plenty to learn. You know, the day this thing happened, I was an hour early for work.
An hour early. You must love your job.
It's a great job, all right. But that isn't the reason I was early.
No?
No. You see, I had to drive my wife and her mother to the dentist. And after I left them, I had an hour to kill.
Jerry, if it's all the same to you, would you mind using some other word than kill?
Why, sure, Rudy. What would you like?
Couldn't you say you had an hour to spare?
Okay. After I left my wife at the dentist, she asked me how I was going to kill, I mean spare, the extra hour before going to work. And I told her I thought I would ride around a while with Sergeant Hergenhan of our force and learn how to be a cop.
He must be a pretty good teacher.
He's about the best there is. Well, I just reported to the sergeant's booth when an alarm came in from headquarters at White Plains that the Northern Westchester Bank at Katona had been stuck up. We were told to be on the lookout for a couple of men heading south, dressed in mechanics' overalls. That wasn't much of a description to go on, but it was the best they had.
How much money had been stolen?
$17,500. And up in Katona, that's not hay.
Nor anywhere else. After you received the alarm, what did you do?
Well, we both knew that if the crooks were heading for New York, there were only two roads they could take, and that both of them came together at an intersection about 100 yards from our booth.
Yes?
The Sides took one road, I took the other, and Officer Orman was stationed further up the line. Then we began to stop all cars. I put the B on 15 or so and was just about ready to admit there wasn't any use when a small coupe came along.
Was there anything about it to make you suspicious?
Not at first. The fellow driving it was well-dressed and didn't act nervous or anything. But there was something about his eyes I didn't like.
But I thought the hold-up men were supposed to be wearing working men's overalls.
So they were. But just the same, I ordered this fellow to get out of the car, gave him a quick frisk, and then walked around, opened the luggage compartment in the back. I tugged at the handle, but couldn't get the thing open. And I figured that it probably was stuck, but it wasn't.
What was the matter with it?
Somebody was holding it down from the inside.
That was rather ducky, wasn't it?
No.
Did you know it then?
No, I didn't. I just kept working on the handle, and pretty soon the top came up about 6 inches.
Yes, go on.
And with it came a pair of guns pointing right at me.
That's even more jolly. So what did you do after that?
I changed my tactics completely, slammed down the top, and yelled for Sergeant Hergenhan. Well, he was quite a distance away, and meanwhile, the two thugs who had been trying to keep me from getting in were now plenty anxious to get out. They kept
shoving up on the top, and I kept shoving down until the hinges finally broke.
Did they get out?
They did when the sergeant arrived. He covered them, I disarmed them, and then they came out of Mika's land.
Tell me, Jerry, what does it feel like to look into the business end of a gun?
I've been trying to figure that out ever since it happened. It was the first time I ever had the experience, and it wasn't very pleasant. But that wasn't when I got the real chill.
No? Well, when did that real chill occur?
About 2 hours later. We brought our three prisoners to the police station for questioning, and the G-men arrived. They looked over the situation for a while, then one of them went up to the fellow sitting opposite me, who'd given his name as Richard. He looked at him a minute, and then he said, "Hello, Merrill. When did you dye your hair?" It was the Rat.
You mean you didn't notice Vandenbusch before?
No, sir. We'd had plenty of circulars about him being a tough guy and a killer, but I didn't recognize him from his picture. When that G-man named him like that, I realized who I'd been dealing with, and my knees started to act kind of queer. And, well, figure it out for yourself.
No, thank you. I'll leave that little job to you. One thing more before you go, Jerry. Are you going to quit police work now that you've become rather famous?
Well, Rudy, I don't think I've become very famous, but as long as I can get around without crutches, I'll be a policeman. It's a great work. We don't get much money, but we have lots of fun.
If your idea of fun is having public rat number one stick a gun at you, you can have my share. Thanks very much, Jerry, for coming up tonight, but stay away from those crossroads at least for a while.
Oh, I don't know, Rudy. They've done all right by me.
By Trumpeter Baker, author, Big Boy Blue.
Not so many years ago, we spent our childhood time in fascination listening to those well-known nursery rhymes. Remember, Baba Blackstein, have you any wool?
Yes, 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 the three bank room.
Remember that old woman who lived in the shoes? She had so many children, she didn't know what to do.
Yeah, and how about that wolf and the three little pigs? While one built a house, the others danced jigs.
Mary had a little lamb.
Sleep was white as snow.
But here's one thing I'll bite a dime that you kids didn't know.
What's that?
Well, Mary's precious little lamb had Peter's black ass foot.
Mm-hmm.
And into Mary's bread and jam, his sooty, sooty foot.
No, say, why stick to all these old, old tales when each day there's something new? Now, let's take the modern version and make sure that it's swingy, too.
Well, what do you suggest to do?
Well, Big Boy Blue.
Big Boy Blue. Little Boy Blue, come blow your horn.
Now, Big Boy Blue, come blow your horn. Big Boy Blue, the summer's on. And band will soon be gone. Come on, Blue, blow your horn.
Big Boy Blue, we're getting late. Big Boy Blue, my teeth can't wait. So before you abdicate, come on, Blue, blow your horn. When you blow hot, so hot, how am I gonna keep my feet? Even with my two left feet, I must have been, I mean, give out, go. Big Boy Blue, you know it's so. Big Boy Blue, before you know, swing high and swing me low. Come on, Blue, blow your horn. He plays so sweetly.
Mingle
Bell,
big boy Blue, you know it's so. Big boy Blue is all you know. Swing high and swing me low. Barbecue and rock and roll. Send any jazz and send me slow. Come on, boys, you blow all your horns. Big boy Blue, blow your horns.
Time to time, of late, our scouts have brought in word of a young man who has, in the bright lexicon of Broadway, been killing the people or sending them into the aisles. On nightclub floor and vaudeville stage, he proved to be a laugh provoker, and he also made several movie shots that didn't have to have bank nights to help bring people in. His name, we learned, was Milton Douglas, his style his own, a debonair fellow of infinite jest. Meet Milton Douglas.
Thank you very much, Rudy. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. As Mr. Valley just told you, my name is Milton Douglas. I guess you know yours. I'm sort of a master of ceremonies, folks. I just came up from Hollywood. I made several pictures there. I'm now making personal appearances to apologize. You folks are very lucky to have me here tonight. I was just about to sign up with the WPA. Which reminds me of my brother. He has a great job with the WPA, but the poor fellow met with a very severe accident last week. He fell off his shovel. I don't know whether you charming people realize it or not, but you're now listening to an actor that's working for one full consecutive night. I'm really very happy to be here tonight. In fact, there are three reasons why I'm glad I'm here. The first reason is I've always wanted to appear on the same program with Mr. McNamee. I've always admired his work, and I'm sure he's always been a great admirer of mine. Right, Graham? I guess he stepped out. Ladies and gentlemen, there are two reasons why I'm glad I'm here tonight. The boys in the band used to work for me. They're really a wonderful bunch of boys, and I think the world of them all, and I'm sure they think likewise of me. Right, boys? I must be in the wrong studio. Ladies and gentlemen, there is one reason why I'm glad I'm here. It keeps me out of the pool rooms.
Mr. Douglas, I'm sorry the way the boys acted. I'm sure they didn't mean it. Personally, I think it's very nice of you to come over and to do this program for me for nothing.
We never did get along, did we, Rudy? You know, there's just a slight difference between you and me and a thing they call money.
Well?
Ooh, look how humiliated he is.
Well, as long as you brought it up, Milton, what do you think you're worth?
Well, Rudy, I'm different from these other fellas. You see, I'm sort of a man of one price. Now, I'm not going to ask you for $9,000, $8,000, $7,000, or $6,000. You give me $5,000 and I'll go to work.
That's reasonable of you, Milton. But I'm also a man of one price.
Hmm.
I'm not going to ask you to take $5,000, $4,000, $3,000, or $1,000.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to give you $16, and if you want it, continue.
Ladies and gentlemen, there comes a time in every actor's life when he feels like singing a song. And I'll take the $16.
Pardon me, could you tell me where I could find Milton Douglas?
Why, my name is Milton Douglas.
Oh, well, when he comes in, will you tell him I was here?
Certainly. Wait a minute, dear. I just told you that my name was Douglas.
Well, how long have you been broadcasting here?
Oh, about 2 or 3 minutes. Why?
Oh, so it was you I heard in my taxi cab.
Oh, you heard me.
Uh-huh.
Well, this is very interesting. How do you think my jokes came over?
On the Mayflower.
I walked right into that one.
You know, I was sitting there in my cab, and I said to myself, I said, now, there's that guy up there trying so hard to be funny. I'll bet you if I went up there...
I beg your pardon.
That's all right. I said, I bet you if I went up there and gave him some of my snappy gags and funny things...
I beg your pardon.
That's all right. I said, it'll really put him over, because after all, he's trying off.
I beg your pardon.
Oh, stop begging. You're old enough to see you.
Say, I don't want to seem hereditary, but who are you?
I don't know. I'm not myself tonight.
Well, whoever you are, there's room for improvement.
Well, was that so?
Hmm.
Well, you ought to be ashamed of yourself going around scaring little children.
Now, wait a minute here. Who goes around scaring little children?
Well, you ought to be ashamed of yourself in case you do go around scaring little children.
Say, this is getting serious.
Why don't you be a man and own up to it? Why don't you say you're ashamed of yourself in case you go around scaring little children?
All right, honey, in case I accidentally go around scaring little children, I'm ashamed of myself.
Well, that's no excuse.
Hit me again, I can still hear her. Look, tall, dark, and annoying, what do you want?
I want to help you broadcast.
Oh, and why do you want to help me broadcast?
Well, I had a fight with my father, and I want to do something to disgrace him.
And what do you do?
Oh, I'm a singer.
Oh, that's nice. You're
mm-hmm.
a singer, hey?
Uh-huh.
And what do you sing?
Songs.
That's a novelty. I mean, what kind of song?
Oh, I sing sad songs.
Oh, sad songs.
Uh-huh. When I sing, I cry.
Oh, that's too bad. Why do you cry?
Because I can't sing.
Well, goodbye.
Wait a minute, where are you going?
Well, I have a date with a beautiful blonde.
Well, be a good boy and have a good time.
I wish you'd make up your mind.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Douglas desires to express his appreciation for your spontaneous generosity, your palpitating coadjuvancy, and the vociferous fluency of your approbation. He's indeed overwhelmed at this magnanimous exuberance, a paradoxical exposition of supposed incandescence, as it were.
That's all right, honey. Thanks, folks. Goodbye.
For the popularizing of When My Dreamboat Comes Home is to be evenly divided between my good friends the Lombardos and Bing Crosby. We'll try our interpretation of it. another varied variety show with Mary Boland of Hollywood, Broadway and the World, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, of course. And among numerous others, the Hamilton College Choir of 60 male voices. It's Airplanes again for the Valley Company as we head south for a five-day appearance at the beautiful McFadden Deauville in Miami. Again, we're wishing ourselves a happy landing at Miami Beach tomorrow morning. This is Rudy Valley saying good night.
This is the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company.